This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I'm Pete. I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on?
Oh, same old, same old. Getting excited. We're recording a little bit earlier than normal because I'm heading up to the Bay Area to check out King of Indies and the G1 special at the Cow Palace. King of Indies is interesting because they only have announced two of the first round matches. I think it was Timothy Thatcher versus Brody King and Flip Kendrick versus... No, Flip Gordon. Different guy.
Yeah,
Flip Gordon Kendrick versus Titan from Mexico. So I'm wondering if they're going to release or talk about the other first round matches before the show. I mean, the show's tomorrow night. We'll see if they announce the rest soon. But I always find it funny when these companies do that. Like, they're going to slowly release the first round matches for the tournament, and then they just never get around to actually releasing all of them. So, yeah, we'll see. But I'm pretty excited for that. How you been, Pete?
I'm doing good, doing good. Just went to Inspire on July 1st, and they had a really good card, man. Opened up with Rex Andrews or Aaron Solo, and they had a good, solid three-star match, good storytelling. Then we had a tag match, and it was Steve Areno and a mystery partner. It was supposed to be Andy Dalton, but he... is hurt, and so he can't wrestle right now. The Heavy Hearts. So Steve Areno brought in somebody who Andy Dalton would hate. It would piss Andy Dalton off and stuff. And so he brings in Angel Blue, who happens to be Andy Dalton's ex-wife. I don't know. I think that's shooting a little too close to home. And then the match didn't do anything for me. Then they had Thunder Rosa versus Cam Cole versus Terry Ramones versus Baby D versus Shane Sabre. And I thought they had a real fun match, a really entertaining 2 3/4 3-star match. They had a fun little dance-off. Yeah, coming from me, you're shocked. But I enjoyed it. And, you know, it works when it's an underneath match, you know, not when it's like Ospreay and whoever when he's doing his dance-offs. I thought it was a super fun, entertaining match. Then we had MGF, Terrell Tempo, T-Ray, and Ashton Jacobs versus Ricky Starks, Ethan Price, Cody Lane, and Zach Taylor. And they had a good 3.5-star match, had a good Southern tag that built into kind of like into a big high spot fest towards the end, but it was really well, looked really well, got well, looked good. I thought Price's face in peril was really well done. I thought T-Ray looked good. MJF, of course, looked good. And you know, his personality carried a heel side of all things, so it was a good solid match. Then we got a scramble tag match, and it was okay. It's not my thing, but I thought Massive and Gino, especially Gino, I thought Gino looked really good, and so good for him. Then we had a really good, fun brawl between Ryan Davidson and former NWA champion Tim Storm. It's like, you know, they worked a total 80s style heavyweight match, good punches thrown. The strike exchanges worked here. They sold the strike exchanges. It was hard hitting. Turns into a double count out. They're bringing in PCO in I think it's September. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a three-way or PCO working one of these guys. I think it was my favorite match of the night. I mean, I gave it 3.25. I don't want to say it was the best match of the night, but I thought it was my favorite because it's a style that's hard to do, and you don't see it happening very well, but these guys really played it off real well. Then we got Delilah Doom versus Chris Wolf. Yeah, this match did nothing for me either. Not my style. But I mean, the Austin crowd loved it. So, I mean, it worked to the audience they were playing to. I just wasn't one of the audience members that it worked for. Then we had a real fun main event with ACH, Joey Janela, and Jeff Cobb. Good 3-star, real fun, athletic match. Cool spots. I mean, Cobb's always a pleasure to watch. Janela's fun. And when ACH is on, he's always fun to watch. So, I mean, overall, it was a really fun show. Nothing blow away or anything, but everything, for the most part worked really well and stuff. I also caught that last match between Ali and Buddy Murphy. I mean, those guys, I got to catch up on the other ones. What was your favorite one of the series, man?
It's tough because it's either between the finals from the tournament or the first Cruiserweight Championship match. I'd have to go back and rewatch all of them. But these guys have like really, really fantastic chemistry together naturally. And even just a couple weeks ago before the match you just saw, they had a match that had a non-finish that was like really fucking good. But yeah, I mean, they're killing it on the 205 Live. Ali in general, I mean, might actually be the best worker in WWE right now overall. But just like, you know, the crowds
like above, like Roddy, you think, and stuff.
And for output, maybe. I mean, the guy he just remarkably has fucking phenomenal matches over and over again. It's like the conversation's probably like him, AJ, and Roddy are like the best guys. And it's like, you know, even Seth, I think, is clearly like a step below those three.
He's having a good year, Seth.
Yeah, for sure. But it's just, it's really, really impressive. It just sucks that the crowd don't care. But Buddy Murphy and Ali have great chemistry together. I mean, the guys are just really good, perfect match for each other. But when you mentioned the show you were just at, I completely forgot. You know, I'm going to pull back the fourth wall. Before we started, you asked me about talking about the show I went to, and I completely forgot I did go to a show.
What show was it? And tell us
about it. It was AWS, and it was their women's tournament. And, I mean, there was a lot of good. It was a bit of a bummer because they had both Jordynne Grace and Madison Eagles, you know, on the card. Both were pulled, replaced with Charlie Evans and Shaza McKenzie. Or actually, Shaza was supposed to be on the show. I'm trying to remember who replaced. But Charlie Evans was good. But really, the one that stood out and the reason why I remembered was Chris Wolfe versus cheerleader Melissa. They had a crazy wild brawl. Chris Wolfe is over, and she's got some character stuff that works really well. But what made the match was Melissa, because Chris Wolfe was playing around, and then Melissa turns it on and starts brawling her around the building, slamming Chris Wolfe into chairs, dumping her in the trash can, just beating the tar out of her, and it really made the match. I mean, it put a lot into it. Cheerleader Melissa gets the win, wins the title there. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. But yeah, I mean, that was fantastic match. Mia Yim versus Nicole Savoy had a great match as well. And in the end, Shotzi Blackheart wins the... It was Dust who was the replacement for Madison Eagles, I guess. Or actually, I guess she would have been the replacement for Jordynne Grace. Either way, Shotzi Blackheart gets the win. Shotzi, I mean, she's good. She has good matches. Crowds get into her. She works hard. But she was nowhere near probably the best worker in the tournament. But I can see putting the win on her to get the title shot against cheerleader Melissa, because she's a plucky babyface that the crowd will get into underneath against heel Melissa. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a really good show. It was, you know, a good time seeing the women's wrestling. They always do their big, ridiculous men versus women tag on these shows that I could do without. But, you know, the crowd gets into it and really enjoys it. So I see why they do it. And, it was a lot of fun.
That's good. That's good. I noticed, Dave Meltzer in The Observer, he wrote up a little article, a little talk about how Elgin has kind of been shunned by the indies, how he's worked a few, but they're really low-key. I mean, I don't even know why he put that in there. I guess try to get sympathy for Elgin, you think?
I have no fucking clue. You would think if Meltzer had any brains, he'd stay away from this conversation completely, because he already got some backlash for the way he dealt with this situation. It's like, yeah, why try
right.
to put any sympathy on Elgin? I mean, just let it go, and then we'll talk about it later. But there's another guy who's going to be on the MLW that we review, who, like, he just had some issues, and now he retired and is seemingly coming back with Rich Swann. It's just It's really, really just fucking weird. I mean, I'm sorry, but now we got Lost having his own website, which we should plug, right? Everyone go check out Pro Wrestling Only. I just don't
see... Yeah, hit those links and stuff, and you know, help them pay some bills.
Yeah, but with so many other good voices out there and people who don't go, you know, ridiculously over the top as shills for New Japan, it's like, why is... I don't know. I mean, I get it, but Meltzer just is feeling less and less relevant by the day, honestly. The guy is just like, he's out of touch and behind the times, and it's hard to want to support him when he continues to kind of show that he's all about that old boys network, you know?
Yeah. And then SDI, they announced all the first round pairings. That, I mean, that seems pretty fun on paper. What do you think?
Yeah, my only fear is that it makes it feel really, really obvious to me that Kane Justice isn't going to get out of the first round, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But other than that, the matchups all look really good. That's like my only worry is I hope that Kane can make it into the second round at least.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of hoping that, but I'm sure, you know, they probably have something planned for him. And, you know, this is just good getting him out there, getting his name out there. You know, he hasn't shit the bed at all. He's had really good matches on where he's been traveling. I haven't seen the Kevin Koo match. Is that online anywhere?
I haven't seen it yet either, so I couldn't tell you. I would assume it would be soon, but yeah.
But yeah, we're going to talk about him later on. I thought him and Henry had a good match. Him and Yehi had a good match. So he's getting out there and, you know, earning his stripes, doing a good job. So, he's really not ready, in a way, not to, you know, of course I'd like to see him go, but I mean, this is a pretty damn talented field. So, you know, just being in the tournament, it should give him a good rub, because it has become a destination event. I mean, clearly a destination event. There's going to be a hot dog eating contest there, I hear. I'm going to throw my hat into that and my name into the hat there. See if I can take home the trophy for this week in wrestling and the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation the website crew. What else is there going on? Anything of interest you want to talk about?
I guess for me, being that I have been kind of tangentially, you know, following a lot of deathmatch stuff for the past couple of years, I did find something interesting that's getting a little bit of buzz on the deathmatch scene. As I watched Tournament Survival this year, which was fantastic, as it was last year. Tournament of Death, which was okay, but I think really shows... not a lack of depth, but just a lack of, I guess, inspiration in the rosters in CZW, especially for their deathmatch workers. They had some guys on there who were moderately new deathmatch workers, but then a lot of guys who were just same old, who are not super dynamic and really just the old. And it just, I feel like you have to have something special now to really stand out as a deathmatch guy. And then, you know, the one thing I'll give CZW is I think that last year they may have in some ways made a mistake. They gave the win to Jimmy Havoc, and while I got it, it felt like something they should have done 2 or 3 years before when Havoc was really at his peak of his powers. And I felt like him in Tournament of Death really exposed his lack of really being a ultra-violent CZW-style deathmatch guy. He really seemed to take it light throughout the whole tournament, and having him end up winning the thing really didn't feel like he earned it. But this year... again, I'll give them the credit. I feel like they do a good job of making sure that the Tournament of Death is won by someone who seems like they deserve it, who seems like they've earned it. It's the right time to pull the trigger based on the fans' reactions. And, you know, they gave it to Jimmy Lloyd, and he's a guy who... my only issue is just that I can't take him seriously. He just kind of comes across like a goober, and that's kind of the problem with a lot of these deathmatch workers in general. But one deathmatch that's getting a lot of praise is in Big Japan, and it was Takeda versus Asami Kodaka. Takeda, the deathmatch champion right now for Big Japan. Asami Kodaka is kind of a freelancer who goes all over the place, who's got a bit of a following. A lot of people are really into him, and people are going crazy on this as, like, you know, possible match of the year, best deathmatch, this and that. And realistically, to me, I think the reason why it stands out is it really had the same psychology as, like, a New Japan main event. It was something... I heard someone kind of calling it similar to Shibata versus Ishii with light tubes. I think that's pretty fair. But my problem with this, within moments of the match, I mean, the guys are just smashing light tubes over their own heads repeatedly. They're looking for big strike exchange and then backing off. And then... you know, if that opening wasn't bad enough, Asami Kodaka goes throughout the match, he can repeatedly is, like, going out of his way. Smashing a light tube over your head is fucking stupid. Over your own head is stupid. obviously, especially in the context of a match. But throughout the match, he's repeatedly going out of his way to take back bumps onto light tubes, like throwing himself into a back bump to hit a light tube. And it's just, to me, it really overexposes everything. It really kind of devalues the light tubes and the violence that you're getting. And these guys are really going through this, they're bleeding everywhere. And to me, it's like, just like I don't like kind of the pissing contest strong style stuff where the guys are knocking the fuck out of each other, I feel like doing the same thing in the context of a death match doesn't make it good, but a lot of people are going crazy for this match just because of that. And it's, I think that's what it is. It's a nice cross section of the two things, and it's for people who are interested because they don't watch this stuff. But I'm like, if you want to see some good deathmatch wrestling, if you're, for some reason, you're interested in it because of that match, I'll say from the Tournament of Survival this year, check out, if you just want to, you know, watch one match, check out the final. It's Ciclope versus Medio Extrema from DTU in Mexico. The two luchadores end up in the finals against each other in the tournament, and they have a killer match. Ciclope is probably the best deathmatch wrestler going in modern time right now. There's just something about the guy, like I talked about. He's got the charisma, he's believable, and his stuff looks good, and his stuff feels like they're actually trying to kill each other. Even though these guys are friends, tag team partners from DTU, you believe that they're fighting for the honor of winning the tournament. And to me, that's what makes it better. And then this match, like I said, I think that if you like pissing contests, guys trying to show off how tough they are and doing stuff that makes no fucking sense in the context of a actual competition, then sure, this probably works for you. But if you want something that feels like a real competition where they're trying to kill each other, especially when they're using these insane ultraviolet weapons, I want to really feel like these guys are in it to hurt each other. I don't want to feel like they're playing around. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I see this getting a lot of praise, and I just think it's kind of insane. The only reason why it's getting praise is because I do think it hits some of those same kind of cross-section of fans that are really obsessed with New Japan main events.
That's fair enough. Well, let's get right into it then, huh?
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's look at MLW Fusion, episode number 11. We get a recap of last week to open the show. Then Barrington Hughes has the Spirit of 76 bandage gun minus the blood. No blood, because he had to face Callahan's death machines while he sent Strickland to fight his bounty. And then we get it was kind of what it was. I kind of dig the Spirit of 76 bandage, but it does lose its coolness when there's no blood involved whatsoever. It was okay, I guess. I don't know. Hughes doesn't strike me as a top guy, so I don't even know why Strickland's hanging with him and stuff and getting involved. I don't know. What did you think of the segment?
Barrington, I mean, his promo was fine. I like this interview girl a lot more than the other interview girl that they have in MLW, but like, because the other one just comes across so fake and so staged. And this one, she's a little bit more lifelike, I guess, but even still not great. And yeah, MLW, I feel like they have, the interview people is a good kind of analogous to even Barrington Hughes. I think that they have a lot of guys that or a lot of people that they're trying to use in roles that they're not kind of people outside of your Shane Strickland's and Sammy Callahan's, who you know from all over the place. They have some people that they're trying to have be their breakout stars, and they seem to have something in a way of a look, but then miss some of the authenticity or something that's going to push them over the top. And Barrington Hughes is one of the guys. I feel like he's trying. They're trying to present him in a certain way, but he doesn't quite have the spark that makes it believable, and it does. It does hurt it because they are pushing him as if the spark is there and as if he is at that level when he's just not quite there. And that always hurts your credibility of the entire show when you see someone who's being presented as something that they're clearly not.
Yeah. And he's a throwback to the, back in the day era, but he doesn't bring anything to this table whatsoever. So it's just like, just there. Then we get a Cotto Brazil interview. But it ends up getting taken out by the death machines. I thought this worked. I'm really getting into the Cotto Brazil character and building him up as a long dog to get his ass handed to him here. I thought it was good. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. Cotto Brazil is one where he's a guy that they're positioning as their kind of one of their special MLW attractions, but he actually fits the level that they're putting him at. But that's because they've have him somewhat slotted as, you know, upper mid card, earning his way up. So it actually is working. My problem is just Callahan. I can't get into Callahan promos. I just don't like him, and he's doing the stupid hot crust buns here thing and all that. It's just I just can't with this guy, man. He's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. And then they set up a, then they set up Ariel Dominguez versus Jake Sky, but Sue Young and Zeta, what was her name?
It's like Zeta something. She was in NXT. She was in the Mae Young Classic and she was in NXT, right? But I can't remember, and I don't know what they're calling her in MLW, and I don't even remember her name when she was in NXT. She was not, you know, super prevalent. I know her real name is like Julie Real. I know she's from Southern California and actually trained in jiu-jitsu, but I don't know what name they're calling her here.
That's good. Yeah, I felt it was weird.
Yeah, I did not get into the angle at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. Then we get a Strickland. What do we get here? Package.
It's like a Strickland, oh, yeah, Strickland video package. Yeah. Whatever. Playing off of the stuff with Loki and Shane. And it's all narrated by Loki, which his voice is great. But the content, it's like the content really takes a back seat. And again, it's that, you know, style over substance, which I think is going to end up being the biggest problem for MLW as we continue to watch it, is what I think is my issue here, is the presentation, the edict of the company seems to be that kind of style over substance. I mean, MJF is a guy who I think he fits the MLW, obviously, brass perfectly, because he's a guy who I think is not quite there, but everyone positions him as if he is, and I think that MLW, they show that, they kind of expose themselves, because he's a guy that they're going to treat that way, you know? So there is that kind of mentality, and this promo package is that, again. Like, I don't really know what they're presenting me. Like, they're not telling me much, but it's cool, it's put together slick, and it's got the nice voiceover from Loki, so it works from that regard. But when it comes to getting me excited for anything, I don't know what I'm supposed to be getting excited for even here.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then we get they're playing Battle Riot. Okay. Then they plug Battle Riot. You know, they're going to be on their TV, so they're kind of ripping off the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, I wish, you know, they'd come up with, I mean, be different, you know. I understand watching WWE TV to see what's trending and what's getting over, but, man, you got to be different. And, oh, we're going to have a 40-man Rumble instead of a 30-man Rumble. That's not being different. That's just copying it. And look, ours is bigger. We have 10 more people. I just... comes across as a cheap knockoff. What did you think?
Yeah, and it's disingenuous, because they say it's for the first time ever, 40-man Rumble or whatever, and it's like, well, WWE did do a 40-man Rumble, and it's universally panned as one of the worst Rumbles in the history of the company. So it's clearly not better because it has more people, because it's been proven to be, you know, ineffective. So yeah, it comes across really bad, honestly.
And then we get, we find MVP walking around, And he's in the boiler room, and he finds Cotto Brazil, who has his phone there. But when he's helping him out, he leaves the phone there anyway. I don't know. I get using gimmick matches, but I wouldn't use, like, the famous gimmick matches that are... You're not going to get over. Get over on them. So it feels just like a cheap ripoff again. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't get super into the boiler room. I'm with you on that. The phone thing was weird, because I couldn't tell, like, if it was supposed to be he's leaving Cotto's phone, or if it was a phone that Sammy and the Death Machine left there with a message.
Why was MVP walking around, you know?
Yeah, why is he hanging out in the boiler room to begin with?
Explain that I knew you're missing. I saw the TV, so I went to look for you or something.
Right. And then the other part of it, too, is you know, backstage stuff just recently on the on Instagram. MVP posted a story saying that he's done with MLW.
Yeah.
So now we're finishing through this storyline, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I talked about it last week with the review that I have issues with MVP and the way that he's presented and being used in the company. And it's funny because then, like, a few days later, I'm seeing posts that they're parting ways with him. And he's saying, I don't even know exactly what's going on or why I'm leaving. So who knows if it's work, if it's an angle, if it's real, if it's not. But either way, it does make this angle feel like a lame dunk angle because you know that at the end of it, MVP is gone anyway. So what's the real ramifications of the whole thing?
Yeah.
If half the feud is going to be out of the storyline and you don't even know if it's going to be worked into the storyline that he's leaving because he was fired after it was filmed. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, what's the payoff? Then we get a Freddie Ahai versus Sammy Guevara match. I mean, I was excited about this. I'm really liked the early work. It was real snug, just the basic mat wrestling. But what they were doing was fascinating because they were like, you know, crunching headlocks and stuff like that. It's a big difference between being a pro wrestler and a guy who wrestles on the weekends. And these two guys came across as professional wrestlers here. I loved Yehai Shine versus the arm, then the other arm, then the legs. They started working the back. Totally digging that. I liked how they set up Sammy's heat, but he never really got a heat. I mean, he got one or two moves in, then got cut off, and they went back to the Shine. Kind of disappointing in that sense. I mean, yeah, he ends up doing the job, which is fine, but they just, you know, they cut everything out to make it interesting. It was just like whoopee-doo, and it just kind of, you know, and it was almost like an extended squash in a way, since Guevara only got like one or two moves in, and it was selling most of the way. It was just really, but I liked what I saw, but FFL Guevara should have been positioned a lot better in this match. What about you? What are you thinking here?
Yeah, and I mean, for both of us, it's two of the guys that I think we both really enjoy, so we're excited to see them. And then, you know, it's unfortunately the curse of the television match is that we don't get, you know, don't really get everything that you would get from a big time singles match from these guys and somewhere else. It's probably condensed, cut down. I like the tease pre-match with the Filthy Crew hitting up Yehai, because I think he'd be a perfect fit in that group with them, with kind of the Filthy guys being very similar to Catch Point, but, you know, more douchebag MMA than Catch Wrestling. But still, I think Freddie Yehai could transition into that group pretty well. The match itself, I thought, good presentation for Sammy. Sammy is kind of coming into his own. I like his look right now with the denim vest with the patches.
Yeah.
His gear is looking better than before.
He knows how to be a heel. He's standing out.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just weird about, I mean, he's come across as a star. Why don't they let him? Let him.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw Sammy versus Speedball from DDT, but it was fantastic. Really, really great stuff. And it's just here he's getting the good presentation. There he's getting to have the great matches. It's like, when's the company that's going to, you know, do both? And have him be the guy who's presented as a star and also gets to have great matches, because that's when things are going to come together. I mean, maybe PWG is the closest thing right now, where he's, you know, probably the biggest heel in the company. It's either him or Jonah Rock, and he's also getting to have really good matches, especially just recently with Walter. But I felt like here he was neutered. I mean, he didn't get to show off really what makes him tick, and it's not spots. It's, you know, that work and that heel work. And when you don't get to work in a heat segment, then how do you get to show up being a great heel? I did like Sammy selling here. He was really done really well, but I also think it hurts him to then have the valet who's, you know, kind of disappointed in him post-match after he sold so well. I think it really, it kind of just antagonizes the negative aspects of that rather than helping to build him up in any way. So we'll see where they go moving forward. I honestly think that De La Renta she's kind of a poor manager, and pretty much anybody she's saddled with right now, I think, is in some ways hurt by having her around more than they're helped. So we'll see how that continues on.
Well, I just noticed it because I was cruising through YouTube before I got online with you, and they did a little promo with her in a hot tub. And she fired Sammy Guevara.
Okay, not shocking, but might be better for him, honestly.
Yeah, I think as Lucha, I think, what's the crash? Yeah, not the crash. What's the other one?
Which one? Is it
Cody
Lucha Underground?
No.
Oh, Aerolux.
Aerolux, yeah. I think they're going, they're starting to run again, and so I think Guevara was like doing these like one shots, two shots to get some name, you know, thinking that they would use him better and he'd get have good matches because he's such a good worker, but here it didn't transpire. I already had good matches in Lucha Underground, though, so and that was just to help him get to become more and more familiar. Then we have Lawler, Gotch, and he's there with Low Key in the back. I mean, I don't know if they're teasing something there, but it just not, it just didn't work for me. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just really not digging anything, like a lot of anything that they're doing with the Lawler group backstage. I like them in ring, but it's just a lot of these vignettes and promos, and they do multiple promos and vignettes with these guys throughout the show. I mean, then Lawler comes out to even do commentary in the main event or you know, the ACH Rich Swann match. So yeah, I don't know, man. It's just kind of overbearing, and especially overbearing on something that I don't necessarily find to be very good.
Yep. Then we get a video package of Callahan and the... oh, and the Death Machines. It's like, okay, this is lame too. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not into it. Again, I don't like Callahan, and I especially don't like his promo stuff, honestly.
Yeah. And then we get Jimmy Havoc promo. I mean, again, I know he just comes across as like Raven Light, so it's just hard to take him seriously. What did you think of the promo?
I was fine with it, but yeah, I didn't love it, and it wasn't as good as some of his other stuff where he came across unique. I do think that you're right that here he is presented a little bit. It's a little bit more toned down and a little bit more, I guess, maybe more realistic than, you know, the stuff in progress with him chopping up bodies. But at least that stuff made him stand out and feel special. This is a little bit too. Yeah, it feels like it's something that's been done before.
Yeah, and then we get a. ACH, and another segment targeting. It looks like Cade. It looks like Lance. I mean, Jimmy. What's his name? Is it Jimmy Cade? No. Lance Cade.
Lance Cade's dead, isn't
he? Jason Cade. I'm sorry, yeah. Jason Cade. You see him walk out on his partner, but it was so quickly. It's hard to see what the hell is going on. You know.
Yeah, I did not. I didn't really even know what was going on with that little bit.
But the main event is we get ACH versus Rich Swann. What did you think of this?
Really liked the work of the match. Lawler was a little overbearing on commentary. Again, I've talked about it a lot of times in the past where wrestlers on commentary cannot always be the best for helping get the match over. Really, really loved the selling from ACH. Swan, I mean, I won't say that, like, I have issues with Swan. He's pretty, I mean, for the most part, he's pretty good, but I feel like he's just past his prime, and he doesn't necessarily have the cachet built up to be a nostalgia act kind of guy. He was good here for this feeling like a dream match for ACH, but it did feel like ACH is, you know, surpassed him in a lot of ways. It's just the injury and the shoulder work and the stuff that they're playing off of there that that helped, but... Realistically, it felt like, yeah, it's like this should be like completely passing of the torch kind of thing where even going out of this, Swan should like, I mean, I talked about it, Swan's already retiring, but then instead of like kind of having that feel, we get a finish that feels not necessarily like a fluke, but I mean, it's not ACH getting, you know, just the clean win with his move. It's kind of a roll up counter out of nowhere. So I don't necessarily know if I agree with doing the finish that way. And if I personally would have done something that helped get ACH over a little bit stronger, even if I did like the selling and I do like the idea of the shoulder injury and the fact that he had to get the win this way, possibly playing into something bigger with Lawler. It just felt like Rich Swann was not the guy for this. Rich Swann right now is not the guy for ACH to be, you know, squeaking out a victory over. It feels like a guy he should be cleanly beating in a more definitive way.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the story. I didn't know exactly where it was going, and actually the whole episode I thought it was it is, again, it was the same problems they've been having where they throw too much stuff in there, and then there's stuff they don't give you enough of. So, I mean, it's just they're definitely they need to find a better booker, or whoever's booking it needs to be make it a little bit tighter. Feature guys who they can use so they're not just disappearing or signing contracts. I think they're getting burned on that. So they just need to, you know, be smarter and create some talent. It's out there. I mean, there's plenty out there. It's just a matter of you being able to locate it and stuff. But the show still needs some tinkering. What do you think overall out there, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, what did we get? 2 matches in 40 minutes, and only one of them was really, like, a solid, solid match with the ACH and Swan. And, like, I get that that's the idea, but, you know, of TV wrestling is trying to drawing, and it's not necessarily about giving away matches, and this is a little bit more old-school kind of presentation. But even then, I think you can hide it a little bit better. This show really feels blatant in how many segments are back-to-back-to-back, all segments, and then...
Yeah.
The one kind of match that you used to disguise a segment for was pretty blatant too, and it also fell flat for me with the, you know, with Su Yung and the Zeta girl coming out to jump the two guys who were about to have a match. Just it didn't feel to me, I could do fine with a Barrington Hughes squash type segment or anyone else getting another squash in there to really just be a way of putting someone over but not necessarily being a competitive match that you're giving away. So for me, yeah, just they need to figure something out. I want to see more action in the ring, even if it is, you know, not necessarily competitive matchups and a little bit less vignettes and backstage stuff for the 45 minutes that I'm you know, sitting through here. Unfortunately, it just feels like I'm not getting enough for that my time. And I can definitely see why other people I've talked to are not continuing to want to keep watching the TV show because, yeah, it doesn't feel like you're getting a lot out of it. You're just getting a lot of filler and not a lot of kind of substance,
and none of the characters honestly besides Kodo, I mean, and then a lot of people are just miscast, like the Lucha Brothers as heels. That's just not working. I like Kodo Brazil, but you know, that's just a scratch. Most of the stuff I don't think they have a full understanding of what they're doing, and it just seems real crowd. There's a lot of filler in it right now. It feels too crowded.
And there's not a lot of guys who you feel like are giving you their best performances here in MLW. You know what I mean? Like, I was talking about it with Sammy, but it's like there's almost nobody who I would say, Kodo maybe is in the conversation, but there's not a lot of guys I would say, oh yeah, his best work is happening in MLW. And that's kind of a problem in modern wrestling right now, is you need to have a couple kind of flagship tentpole stars or acts that you can put, you know, kind of plant your name or your flag in the ground saying, like, this guy is doing his best work here in MLW. That's why you should be paying attention. And I'm just not getting that at all from this company.
Totally agree. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk some NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of The Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back with NXT. We get Dakota Kai versus Santana Garrett. Again, I think Kai looks pretty good. Now let me explain something. She's the captain of Team Kick, but there is no Team Kick.
In the same way that, like, you know, there's no Balor Club or whatever, you know, like, it's just a thing that
so
she says.
The fans are Team Kick.
Kind of. It's like, it's just a thing that she says, you know, yeah. So it would be like her fans or whoever, you know.
I'm liking her. I think she's semi-attractive. Good. She seems like a good enough worker. It seems like they could do something with her on the roster. I know they've used her in parts, but I feel she's getting some traction, getting over. So the answer to what she's been doing with her, they've actually worked. And then, you know, this match was okay. Nothing to write home about. Nothing amazing. But I thought Dakota Kai looked pretty good. I liked her kicks. I loved her her washboards and stuff. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm with pretty much everything on Dakota Kai. My only issue with her is that I think that while her selling is really good, I think that it doesn't affect me, and I think it's could be a bigger issue for her overall in that it doesn't really kind of compel me to get behind her, even though she sells so well, because she's not super dynamic on her offense. I like the kicks. I mean, that seems to be the saving grace that everyone talks about for her is her kicks, and I guess for me, I just don't get super into them or something because I don't see it as a big deal that, you know, she has good kicks, because I think that she plays dead sometimes too much. I think that she could, you know, show me more fight from underneath. And I just feel like when she is in control, I don't get super excited for her offense. So even though she sells really well, it's really tough because I don't get invested in her because I don't care about her then when she's going to be on offense because it's not going to be exciting and that I'm into it. But I'm with you. And if they can build that part up and they can get her to a point where she does start to have a couple key spots and a little bit more dynamic action when she's in control, then I can definitely see that you can build something out of her because she is a really good seller and could get over and get a lot of support from the crowd, which she already is getting. It's just me personally that I worry she's going to start to fall flat when people see her as just like a punching bag.
Right. Okay, I can buy that. Then we got a heavy machinery vignette. They're working out and barbecuing. We don't see the barbecuing. And while Dozovic is going to check out the steaks, TM61 jumps Tucker and then injures him. Nice. I like this. I mean, it's not an incredible angle. It was a little too humorous in a way, but I liked what they're doing with TM61. I like that they're making them sneaky heels like the Midnight Express in a way. I honestly think they'd do well with a manager at this point. I mean, hell, I'd bring in Precious Paul, even though he's known, you know, he's usually doing it with big, you know, big monsters. But, I mean, I think they'd do well adding another element to them. If it's not a Paul Ellering, maybe a female valet, something. But I like what they're doing here. I like what they're doing. I like that they're really trying to put some fire on TM61 as a heel act, the Mighty 61. What about you? What are you thinking here?
I'm pretty solidly with everything you're saying there. I would say the biggest travesty was that we did not get to see the grill and see those beautiful steaks being cooked as we got cut
That's
off.
That's how I like them cooked too, medium rare.
Exactly.
Medium rare is how I like my steaks.
Yeah. I mean, Otis Dozovich, you think his, you know, obviously he's a fantastic wrestler, but it sounds like as a culinary expert, he's also got it on lock. So, but yeah, I mean, I really like the angle. I love that they're talking about getting serious, but you know, they can't get away from their stakes. I mean, that's still part of being serious, right? And and then you know, the jumping from the mighty and that he's out, and then what I really like is how that leads into the match. I thought that the match was also,
yeah.
I mean, I got super excited. I'm like, oh my god, they're actually going through with this when Dozovich is coming out. So yeah, I thought that was it was really good
was
overall.
They
everything.
Had to do that. Yeah, I totally agree. Then we have Shayna out, Baszler. She's out and she's cutting a promo, and you know, she's almost, you know, she was able to get the crowd back against her, but they're almost baby facing her by her being such a badass in a way. I love the line about what do you do with a psychopath? You put him to sleep or whatever. Yeah, she said. I absolutely loved it. She has a natural aura about her. And it's just funny because she's such a nice, nice sweetheart. I mean, have you met her before?
Oh yeah, plenty. I mean, plenty of times coming from here in Los Angeles. And she's nerdy and into wrestling, and she's super nice. And yeah, I mean, she's just great. But she comes across like she'll rip your fucking head off.
Yep, and she has the aura. You buy into it, and yeah, man, she could. I don't know when they're planning on calling her up. I mean, she feels like she could be a long term. She's almost more effective than Asuka in a way, as doing, because they portrayed Asuka as a badass, but Shayna almost has chinks in her game where you feel like you can beat her in certain aspects. Which I think she's actually more effective than Asuka was here in NXT, and she might be one of the more effective NXT champions we've had in a while, where she has a special aura about her. She's changing the game in a way. And I'm really behind her, and her promos are getting better and better and better. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I'm with you, and she's proving to be good at delivering the scripted, produced, you know, WWE style promos really well, which is, you know, something that not everyone can do, but she's able to do it, especially coming. I mean, in some ways, maybe it's good, but the way that modern wrestling is that you don't have a lot of Dusty Rhodes or, you know, guys who are coming in to WWE and they have these years of experience doing their promos off the cuff, and then it's tough for them to get used to reading off of a script. So like Shayna doesn't have a lot of that experience. So then it's easier for her because she's first learning to do promos based on them being kind of scripted. So maybe that's why it's like more natural. I don't know. Either way, she's doing a really good job being able to adapt to that.
Does she have some acting background in her too?
Not really. No. I mean, she's just an MMA. And so, yeah, I mean, that's it. And then like you talked about the kind of having chinks in the armor, I think comparatively to Asuka, and it's, you know, I'm not trying to be Vince Russo over here, but I think that part of the issue is that Asuka, it's really hard to humanize someone when most of the crowd can't understand what language they're speaking and doesn't really relate to their background with her not being, you know, able to speak English super well and not being from America. So you're able to get into Shayna as a person, and then that's how you see the weaknesses and the chinks in the armor, is because you can really buy into her promos and her and everything else that she's communicating in that regard as well. So that really helps in what you're saying, like making her almost more effective in this role than Asuka was because of that.
Now, they've been having problems, actually. They've been doing a great job promoting her and building her up. But they've been, actually, ever since, ever since Bayley went up, they've had a problem developing more than one woman at a time, in a way. I mean, right now you have Shayna, you know, you have Bianca Belair, but you don't buy her at the same level as Shayna right now. You think she has potential, but, you know, they're having problems building two women up at the same time. It was even with Bayley, all they could do was add Bayley. Why do you think that is? Do you totally think I'm wrong?
I don't think you're wrong, but it does feel like it's still to the point where WWE in general, and especially in NXT right now, it's hard for them to have any female storylines other than the person who's trying to win the championship and the champion. So that's why you end up where you have whoever you're heating up to challenge and then the champion, and that's it, and not really anybody else. So, yeah, I just... They tried. The thing is that they're trying, but I think that they're just picking the wrong people. Like, Lacey Evans and Kairi Sane program, the reason why that falls flat is because Lacey Evans just isn't quite at that level. The stuff that they're doing with Dakota Kai now maybe will end up being it if they continue to build her up separate from Shayna now. I could see them developing something there. It would be one of the first times that they're able to do something like that. But yeah, I just feel like because the champion kind of is overbearing of the entire division, it becomes like that's what it's all about. And so whoever is the champion, they're the star attraction, which in some ways is good. But yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like you're able.
Part of the other problem is that even if you get a second one, they never get the other ones over even close, like the third or fourth act, where it doesn't feel organic. It feels unorganic. It never feels organic in a way where you see them coming up and getting wins and wins, and they're getting elevated in a way. Then to finally, 6 months down the line, they finally get a shot. Here, they're building up to their big next NXT, and then, okay, then we'll heat you up when it's time to, but they haven't been able to run simultaneous, not even close to simultaneous women's programs.
Yeah, exactly. They're just not able to do, I guess they're just really bad at building up like interpersonal rivalries between women, and it always has to be about the championship or something stupid. They can't just make it.
Yeah, because even when they had the Iconics there, they were able to have their own separate feuds, but again, it felt lesser because they weren't, for the title, and it should feel lesser, but the Iconics never elevated anybody, I don't think, to better. To make them better in a way, or they're standing better.
Yeah, but then, I mean, you could also point out the men's side too, where it's like either, I don't know, look at the Gargano-Ciampa feud. It felt like that ended up overshadowing the championship to a point that was almost a negative as well. So you could say like there is negatives to both sides of the
same thing. Right, I understand that. I mean, I get that. But, I mean, you still had the title was still, that felt important. Oh, hell, but then the day, I mean, they didn't just devalue the title. Against that, I mean, you also had the Ricochet Velveteen Dream. That was a more interesting program than the title program.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I think part of that is having Aleister Black as your champion. I don't think he's that guy, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Honestly, they could have made the title interesting if it was Ricochet and Velveteen Dream. Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't know if Aleister, you're right, I just don't know if Aleister's a guy to be the champion.
I like him, I just don't think he's that guy.
He checks a lot of boxes.
I think he will make plenty of money on the main roster. I think he could be a good Intercontinental champion. I think he could be good in personal feuds. I think he doesn't have that overt charisma to be a top guy. I mean, like a Ric Flair or in that ilk, or John Cena type, he reminds me more of Bret Hart, but Bret Hart had years and years of being an underdog, and that's what got him over. And Black just doesn't have that. And I think, and he doesn't have the cachet of like Adam Cole had on the Indies or Ricochet and stuff. So, I mean, he has a longer, it's just tougher for him.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we're kind of diverging into a whole different conversation now, so. But yeah, maybe they do need to work on doing more with the women other than just the championship.
Yeah, because they made the women's championship. I mean, the women's championship feels more over than the NXT title right now.
Yeah, which is something that happens in this company.
And it almost even the North American title is even getting more play, if you ask me.
Right. Well, with the North American and the tag team titles being, Undisputed Era, it does feel more important than the championship right now.
Yeah. And I've never thought that would happen in NXT. But it has. Then we get a Danny Burch interview, and of course, Undisputed Era interrupt, and it's setting up Cole versus Danny Burch next week is lurking out for 3 months. Fuck.
God damn. That's gonna hurt. Yeah.
I mean, that's going to hurt Burch, too.
I'm
sorry. That crowd in Chicago wouldn't have turned. If it wasn't for Larkin, Burch still would have been hearing the quietness. Burch is a good worker, but he's not only Larkin. That's the difference.
Birch is boots and trunks wrestler. He's like the worst version of that, honestly. He's good for what he is, but he's not, you know, Oney Lorcan, who could fire a crowd up instantly. I mean, Oney Lorcan is one of the best nonverbal kind of get over guys that's probably going right now. I mean, the guy repeatedly gets over everywhere he goes just based on his in-ring action. You know, people buy into him instantly. You understand the act and you like it pretty much instantly. And yeah, having him gone is going to very negatively affect Birch because he's not going to be able to continue over. And it sucks because this whole fucking time that Oney Lorcan has like been one of the best workers in NXT, he's getting no love, barely fucking talked about. And then finally he's getting something and then he's out injured. And it's such a bad time for the guy. I liked the interview with Birch here, though. I thought that Birch came across really well and believed. Like,
I thought, yeah, no, I agree. I liked him here. Yep.
I liked his promo here a lot. So I just don't know.
The only thing is he's going to lose. So I mean, that's the only thing. You
which
know?
Is not going to help. You know, continue to get him over moving forward. So, yeah.
This I mean, you know, they already lost to the Undisputed Era in the tag. It was nice touch of him bringing up that he beat Kyle. Because most people, I already forgot.
Yeah, I wouldn't have remembered. Yeah.
Huh?
I wouldn't have remembered.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he did beat Kyle in that schmozzy thing that set up the big tag match. But yeah, he's gonna struggle without Orny.
And he just got signed.
I'm with you. I thought the promo was well done by his end. I thought he carried his end here. But it's just like, he's not a singles guy. He could be a tag team star, but he can't be a single star.
Not in NXT. I mean,
yep.
He can get over in you know, whatever random southern indie that their shows don't even make tape or don't end up online for anybody to watch, even when they are getting taped, and he can get over there. But yeah, he's not going to be a top guy in
yeah,
NXT.
It's a different animal. I mean, just it's a totally different animal. Yeah, he can get over just through work on an indie show, and that's why it's an indie, you know, because you're coming to hardcore fans. So you're appealing to people who go to watch, are hoping to get really good matches. And when they do, they suck into it. But then we get a War Raiders vignette, and they actually talk about their former title runs and stuff in this vignette. I was kind of surprised about that. What about you?
Yeah, I dug it. I definitely liked it. And I like when WWE doesn't just try to exist inside of a box. I'm liking it. I'm liking where they're going with these guys in general. I don't know what the end game is, but I'm interested in them. And I think that the last time I saw them have a match, I was really surprised at how over they're getting playing this kind of overt babyface act that I didn't think would necessarily work as well for them. So at least they're, you know, putting some kind of investment in these guys.
Yep. And then we got the recap of who do we have here? Oh, Black and Ciampa, of course, great stuff, right?
Oh yeah, of course. I'm really, really excited for that. 3 weeks though until we get the match, so we'll see what happens.
See what happens, then. Right? Then we got the Mighty 61 versus Dozovic. I mean, you gotta love it. I mean, the nice setup to get heat on TM61. They're gooding a great job. Making these guys legit heels. They're flashy, and they have heels. They're flashy heels like Midnight Express. And here I loved it that they get the 2-1-1 against the big muscle head. And I just loved it. It just heated. TM61, a month or two ago, was a dead act. And just with some good angles and creativity turning them heel, now they're really a strong heel act in this company and a backbone on shows right now. What do you think the whole entire setup and angle here?
Loved everything about it. Talked about it earlier. I was so excited when I saw Otis coming out by himself. I'm just like, this is the guy that was the protected member of the tag team, and with Tucker Knight, obviously they trust and respect Tucker. That was why we talked about it with the Greatest Royal Rumble. And people talked about why was he in the Greatest Royal Rumble and not other people. It's because he's kind of a, you know, player coach in NXT. You know, he's got the background as a collegiate wrestler, so they believe in him. They trust him to train people. They brought him over to India intentionally for parts of the tryouts to see, you know, who does he, you know, kind of another set of eyes and another guy in the ring to tell you what he thinks about everyone. And so he was kind of carrying the team in some of the work ways and letting Otis kind of hit his key spots and show off his personality, which is, I mean, in some ways it's the way, you know, tag teams should work, right? The guy who's yep. got a deficit, Tucker Knight, doesn't necessarily have the same leap off the page personality that Dozovic just kind of has, even just physically. Dozovic has a physical charisma that's really endearing. And to see that he's going to get to have the match by himself, I was just like, God damn, like, they're starting to trust him more in the wrestling. And I was excited for the storyline because, yeah, why would he back down? Even if he doesn't have his partner, he's going to go through with it. Obviously, this is not, you know, he's not taking on two students. He's taking on two guys who have been wrestling as a tag team for a long time. So he's still in some ways protected, but he sure as shit delivered here. I loved the way every time the Mighty would think that they had outsmarted him, which they did. For all intents and purposes, they did outsmart him. But then when one of them does get him with a cheap shot from behind or whatever, Otis doesn't sell, doesn't go down, and then just stands his ground and gets up in their face, and they're scared, and they're selling, and they're running, and they're taking the back foot, and every chance that they get, they're trying to take cheap shots and run away. And so, yeah, it was just great stuff. But then you also buy into them. They were... Even though they were intimidated by Dozovic, they weren't ever in danger of losing. Even when he was running wild at his most, it didn't seem like he could just put them away. And they do get the win, you know, after enough cheating and everything else. But realistically, they didn't, you know, they beat one guy by himself as a tag team. So there's a lot of heel heat on them, which is fantastic. But they also didn't make them come across like complete jokes. And you still are like, oh, you know, like they actually probably could use the same techniques that they're using here to continue to be threats in the tag team division against tag teams and stuff. So yeah, I mean, everything about it, I think, is great. I'm with you. I think that they're really good at being like a nice mix of cocky and cheating and flashy to where you can enjoy their matches, but you don't really babyface them. They're still heels I thought it got Otis Dozovic over super well, and I hope that it does continue. I've said it 1,000 times at this point, but I do hope that they continue to treat Heavy Machinery at least somewhat seriously and not just as a complete comedy goof act to be beaten by everyone that's on the way up, because there's just something there with those guys. They fit each other so well. They're both talented. And even now, like I said, look at Dozovic. I mean, the guy has come along so well, even just in ring, to where he can have, you know, he can be the only guy in the match, and it didn't fall apart. It wasn't shitty. There was no issues, and the crowd was into the heat and everything going on.
Yeah, hell, I really do think they need a manager, and you know, I'd bring in Stokely as the heel manager who can take bumps and add more heat to him. I think that's the final piece they're missing. Someone to help them maybe with promos a little bit.
I mean, when you were talking about that earlier, I didn't say it, but I really meant to. Is you're so right. Like this act is missing something like that, and it would really put them over the top.
Yeah, I mean, it would work in NXT. I know they probably wouldn't happen on the main roster because there's only Paul Heyman on the main roster for the most part, and Ellsworth.
Zelina now, right? You know, Vega.
Oh yeah,
but
he hasn't shown up. I don't know. Have you
seen him? I know he hasn't been on TV.
Yeah, so does it matter? Okay. Then we got a Bianca Belair promo. Solid stuff. I know, you know, I get bringing up her engagement, but she is engaged to a baby face. So, I know people know the difference. I know people don't think it's real. They know it's a work, but it is still, I think they should... Then again, I think the Street Profits should be heels anyway because I can't stand them. I don't know. What do you think about here? And what do you think about them acknowledging that they're married or engaged or married now?
I think that they went out of their way to not show her who her husband was.
Right, yes.
I think that's very clear that they don't want to link them romantically on television. Which I do find interesting, but it would probably honestly be better for the Street Profits, just like you said, because it would be a catalyst to just make them heels and even be not necessarily muscle, but kind of, you know what I mean? She could probably...
Maybe they're saving it for her when they decide to pull the trigger and give her the title. Maybe letting them jump whoever or something.
That could be better as having them as her entourage, kind of, you know?
Yeah. I could like them as her entourage.
Yeah, because
I think they're obnoxious.
It's kind of like, it would be kind of like the inverse of when Alexa was with Team Banff, when it was like that whole thing with Buddy Murphy and, God, I can't remember the other guy's name at this point. That's so bad. That would be better. I mean, yeah, I think that would work better. Bianca is clearly would be the star of the group, but the other guys, I think, could get a little bit of that kind of overness by leeching off of her. I liked the promo package and the stuff that she did here. I think that Bianca Belair she's coming together. I mean, she could talk. She's got it in ring. She's not, honestly, we talked about it, she's not awkward in ring at all. So, nope. I mean, she's
but she's not great, somewhere. You know?
Yeah, she's not like amazing worker, but she's got everything that you need. And I think if you put her in there with great workers, you could have great matches.
Yeah,
but she's got the tools, and she's not awkward. That's the thing. Like, a lot of these girls who are that new are kind of just sloppy and awkward. She's not that, so.
And she has presence, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, we'll see where they go. I like this, and I think it wouldn't be the worst thing to have the Street Profits just get aligned with her as her entourage, because I think that'd be better. They'd be honestly be better off that way.
Then we get Velveteen Dream versus Chris Dijak. I thought this was a blast. They obviously have something planned for Dijak, but I'm waiting for them to pull the trigger because the dude's just too damn good, too much charisma. Crowd buys him but yeah, man, just do something to him. He's had two grid matches, squash matches, but they've been good. Here he got a little bit more offense than he did against Ricochet, a little bit more. Not much more. And he's the dude's the real deal. So, I mean, I'm ready for him to pull a trigger on him and do something. The guy's too big to be doing jobs on TV. I'm afraid about the jobs hurting him. But luckily, he has the reputation. The crowd knows it. So they're not going to let him enhance him too much. What did he make of this?
I thought that I'm with you in a lot of ways, and I liked it. It was a lot of fun. But I think it shows kind of the WWE babyface problem that they have in general. Dijak, I've said it, and I think that people probably think I'm crazy, but I'll continue to harp on it. I think that Dijak could be like a modern-day Hulk Hogan, in that he's a big dude who comes across impressive physically, but his best attributes are selling and getting the crowd into him. And fighting from underneath and that kind of stuff. And here, I mean, he got to show that off, but you start out the match with him really feeling and coming across like a heel.
Yeah.
And with the way that Velveteen Dream is, the crowd is ready for him to be a babyface, it's even easier to heel Dijak in this match. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think by the end of it, it felt like the idea was that Dijak was the babyface and Dream was the heel. But from the beginning and from the opening, you kind of muddy those waters and you confuse everything because it felt like Dijak was still a heel. The crowd was into Dream. And so I just let the guy come out and play pure babyface.
That booking team is doing everything they can to keep Velveteen Dream a heel. I'll tell you that much. Because when he walked out on EC fucking 3, there's no way they can make that guy a babyface right now. And then he runs off from EC3 today. I mean, they're doing everything they can to keep him as a heel, but it's almost like counterproductive in a way. I mean,
it really is, and it's confusing by the end because, like I said, like Dijak should come out and be pure babyface if that's the plan. If that's the point,
yeah.
Don't have him even working slightly heelish to begin with in the opening. It's like you just confuse and mix everything up. The post-match stuff was fucking insane to me. It's just, like, completely showing the problems with WWE. And this has not been, like, an NXT problem until recently. They're, like, forcing and going against what people want. Like, EC3 comes out, like you said. I mean, the guy is as heely as it comes. But when he comes out and he's chasing off Dream, it's like, oh, he's a big-time babyface. And then he's, as soon as his match starts with Gargano, he's a heel again. But then Gargano is, like, teasing heel. So the whole thing is just fucking muddled for two segments back to back when it comes to heel babyface dynamics, and it's just really confusing. But for what I'm supposed to be talking about right now, Dijak looked fucking great here.
he's only, it's really telling that he's only like a couple inches taller than Dream, because it just shows that on the indies, like the big monster guy is like not even, still to this day, is not that big in WWE land, you know?
Right.
But that again plays into what I said, like Dijak could work, he can play the fucking, the bump and sell babyface to the monsters who are a bit even bigger than him, but he can also get small and work the smaller guys. I mean, he could be such a versatile act for them that they just need to get behind him. And I just worry that he's in this mindfuck zone right now, because I, you know, I'm hearing reports and stuff going around that he's not well liked in right now in NXT. There's management and other people who are not necessarily behind him. And I just worry that he's going to be another one of these guys who washes out in NXT, because he gets to the point where he's questioning himself. He's not confident. He doesn't get to show off what he's best at because, you know, he feels like that's not what they want him to do. All this stuff could happen. And it's just like, God damn, it's another, to me, it feels like a can't miss prospect. And it always seems like the people that they fuck up the most in NXT are the ones who, when they got there, we felt like were can't miss prospects. You know, those are always the guys
who fit the old WWE blueprint too.
Right.
Strapping lands.
Big, big, can work, everything. Those are the guys that you feel like, oh, there's no way that they can mess this up. And then that's always the ones who they mess up. It just, it's really confusing, but it seems to be what's happening again.
And when did they have that Velveteen Dream Aleister Black match? That was like 6 months ago, right?
At this point, yeah. And it feels like it's still the only thing that you think about when you think about Velveteen Dream.
Well, that's the match that made him a babyface, and they still fucking fighting that. Trend. Okay, so EC3's out. Velveteen runs off, and then we get EC3. Versus Gargano, but before that starts up, we get a Mustache Mountain interview, which is just DOA, Dead Men Walking. I know you're losing the titles.
I know.
And then
all I can think about during their promo is just listening. I'm like, I'm trying to listen to see, like, Are they gonna say it? They're never gonna say, we're gonna win, we're gonna keep the title. You notice that, because, you know, baby faces aren't supposed to ever lie, right?
Right.
So they are really careful to never say, we're gonna beat them, we're gonna keep the titles. They never say anything like that. They just say, like, we're gonna fight them, they wanna do it, we'll give them a fair shake, we beat them for the titles in our home country, so then we'll let them have their match in their country, like, in their, all this. They just won't say it. And one little detail, again, it's like, I notice these stupid little things, but when, Trent Seven is shaking his phone around, he does something because he sets off the screen, and then you see that Trent Seven's screensaver on his phone is the Mustache Mountain logo. It's just a big Mustache Mountain symbol on his phone. So you know that's just his shoot phone. This guy has his own fucking wrestling logo thing as his actual background on his phone, because that's how into himself he is. It's in some ways it's kind of perfect for the Trent Seven that I know, based on, like, right, being a wrestling fan for so long. But as a baby face, it doesn't come across super well, you know. But it's funny to notice that little shit, you know.
And then we get the EC3 Gargano match, and I thought Gargano, what he was doing with telling the story with his facials, and it, I mean, I can see a lot of people saying, man, that was a little over the top, his facials and the way he was selling, fighting, pulling the knee down or doing it. People forget, man, okay, he might be only playing right now, he might be at full sale, but you know what? Someday he might want to be freaking emoting to 100,000 people at WrestleMania. Okay, that's what they're teaching these guys. This is very Rick Steamboat. A lot of people sometimes say Steamboat was William Shatner, and here he is, William Shatner here. But you know what? Sometimes you need to do that to play to the bigger audience. And you got to remember, yeah, I might only be playing to 1,500 people right now, but the goal is to work in front of 20,000. I thought he was fantastic here, and I thought, what he did was tremendous storytelling with his body language. And then I thought they had a pretty good match, but my God, EC3 using a shoulder nerve hold in 2018 is just mind blowing to me. What were your thoughts here?
Right. I mean, you know, you can say whatever you want about the, yeah, the William Shatner or whatever acting thing you want to say, but I mean, that's what fucking gets over, and that's what, you know, that, like, I think, I can't remember who said it, but it's like, where you make your real money is those, the upper deck seats when you're selling
the bottom, the last few seats, yep.
Yeah, that's where you're making the real money, because you're already covered all the expenses, and you're selling out, and you're making just everything that they pay, that's just cream on the top of everything else you're doing, and that's the people that you play to. The cheap seats are the people who you need to get to show up. The hardcore fans who are going to spend hundreds of dollars for front row, they're coming no matter what. But when you can grip them in the back, you know, the back of the auditorium, and they buy into you, that's what it's all about. And it was over the top. And I shit on, you know, melodramatic bullshit nonstop. But I thought that there's enough here to sink your teeth into from the wrestling. I loved, like I said, I enjoyed watching them be able to deliver this mix. EC3 comes out as a babyface, chasing off Dream. Then you get into the match and he's a heel. But then you're starting to tease some heelness from Gargano. So now everything's in flux. Everything's interesting because it's like, shit, the pure babyface, rah, 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 Gargano is starting to question himself. He's so conflicted because the shit he's going through. Like, if being a good guy was, you know, so right, being virtuous is what mattered, then why did Ciampa beat him? You know what I mean? And you can see that on his face. You can see that being delivered in what he's doing here. And so it's, I mean, you get into it. You have to, like, you just have to buy into it. It's still so funny because I continue to watch this with my wife, and she missed the rise of Gargano, and she just remembers, you know, Johnny wrestling at PWG shows that she couldn't stand. So she's still like, I fucking hate this guy. She does not buy into him. And it's just so funny how all this stuff can easily be still annoying if you didn't get that chance to buy into him. But if you've been following, the emotion and the character and everything else that comes with it has, like, really solidified him as a top guy to where this stuff can really make you buy into and get super into everything. And he's just doing such a great job. But it's just so funny how, like, if you don't know that, you haven't been paying attention to, you haven't seen it, it's still kind of the same stuff that he did before. So it just shows how, like, you can catch fire, and there's something about, like, once you're over, it doesn't matter what you do kind of thing. You know, like, once you're over, the crowd is just going to be into it. You can almost do no wrong, you know? And that's where Gargano was getting to that point where, like, anything he does, the crowd buys into and is invested in and is really into. And this, I mean, on top of that, he's making the right choices as a performer. He's being true to his character, and he's delivering, like, really heart-wrenching and gripping stuff in every match. Even this, like, we talked about in MLW, TV matches are being disappointing and not being something that you buy into. And talked about it last week about how great NXT is right now, even for match quality. And this is one where, like, they didn't, like, rewrite the book of wrestling, and they didn't, you know, have a 7-star classic or anything like that, but you still get a lot out of it because of the emotion and the investment in the story.
Exactly. I mean, it tugged on your emotions, which is something that's hard to do in wrestling nowadays. Because all the fans are jaded. And they taught us how not to care. So, they told us stips don't matter, and, you know.
Exactly. And even with Gargano, and you talked about it even just last week, the guy shouldn't even fucking be here. Yeah. He lost to Lou Ridley's town. But even beyond all that, you still care about him, and you still get into what he's selling, and you still buy what he's selling. Because even though they've sabotaged him with booking, he overcomes.
Yep, exactly. So on that note, why don't we take a break? And we'll come back. We're going to be talking some action wrestling.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Over Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and HistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back, and this is Action's second show. Before we get into it, I just want to hit on some things. I didn't think the announcing was as good as last show, but I also thought last show's announcing was one of the best announced shows I've ever heard. The announcing was still very good, so I don't want it to seem like it's a knock, because it wasn't. But, you know, when you lose, like, a Brad Stutz out of commentary, I mean, the commentary is going to go down because Stutz is one of the, you know, good ones, one of the great ones out there. I also thought the camera work wasn't as tight as it was the first show, and that, again, you had a master in Grant Sawyer on it. So, I mean, I don't blame anyone in particular. I mean, it wasn't nothing. I mean, I didn't think the audio, I thought the audio was fantastic.
There was a little weirdness with the audio mixing that I noticed during the entrances.
Okay.
It felt like the music was turned up and may have been edited in post. I couldn't tell. Which, again, may just sound awkward because I'm used to so many wrestling shows just, you know, sticking with the terrible audio quality of the live over the speakers PA. It was a little jarring that it was kind of overbearing every time the music would start playing, but you have to give them some credit because that means that they were at least interested in putting some effort into that, which a lot of other wrestling shows, they just don't put any effort into that.
Okay. I thought the crowd was really good here. I thought they were hot. And I felt they established a lot of stuff here going forward because I thought the first show was a great show for a first show. And here I thought they were great at breaking some ground and setting some trends going forward, and I liked what I saw. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you on everything. Like I said, I think that at least they're putting in the effort with the audio. The camera work, I can get with you on that. It wasn't framed. Everything wasn't framed as perfectly as I would do it, but at least it's better than some stuff I've seen recently, which is...
Yeah.
This is something that maybe I hope that someone, anyone out there, if you're involved in doing wrestling production and videoing, I've seen this a little bit here and there, happening more frequently because people, anyone with a camera can just, you know, film things and put it out there. Keep in mind that there's something, it's called the 180 rule in filming, and if you're filming something, always keep in mind that you don't want to get camera angles that are over 180 degrees opposite of each other. So when you get that hard camera, you don't want to ever shoot anything from the opposite side of the hard camera because it's super fucking jarring to get video cuts that go from one angle to the complete opposite angle. It throws people off and it looks really bad. Here they did a good job of not breaking that, but I've been seeing it happening a lot more frequently, and it's just something that I think that more people who are doing videography need to keep in mind because it's really fucking hard to watch anything that breaks that rule. The announcing while I agree with you that it was a step down, I am starting to really like Righteous Jesse as a commentator. I thought that he plays off of Dylan really well. There obviously is a... they have some camaraderie between the two.
Agreed.
And I think that, and that they do good. I think that he, Righteous Jesse, can be slightly self-indulgent, which is shocking from someone who's got, you know, is it Self-Righteous Jesse? I think is a little bit of what you get from there. But he is very good for a beginner at this. Dylan is obviously fantastic. The matches, the work, the booking, everything is great, but I'm going to say it now, even before we finish the show. There's a lot of podcasts who do awards and all this, right, at the end of the episodes, especially the Monday Night Wars show that I've been listening to recently, which just made me realize even more that Chad, Chad Campbell of the Place to Be Nation fame, is really in his sweet spot when he's reviewing WCW shows. He's just really good at it. Is the, you know, they give their awards. But if I was going to give an award for the show at the end of it, the MVP of the night on this action show was 100% the crowd. This crowd was amazing throughout the whole night. But specifically, there's one match in particular that they are hot as fuck for that really puts that match over the top. That was already a good match, but it turned it into like a great match. So yeah, I mean, all in all, big thumbs up to Matt for putting these shows together. You know, second show that he's running on his own and doing just a really great job of it so far.
Yep. All right, let's start it off. I want you to open us up with the Lynch Mob versus AC Mac and Ike Cross.
Really, really enjoyed this match from the opener. AC Mac is, just fantastic at getting heat. Good
coming
old school.
Across the top guy, right?
Yeah, he's got the poise. He's got the delivery. He comes across, like you said, top guy material. I see why they open the shows with him. It's great too because he repeatedly opens these shows and feels like he has to take his time and is grabbing the mic on his own and is coming at it without like being even given a chance or whatever. It's really good because it gives him a natural gripe to complain that he's, you know, obviously should be a top guy and treated better than he is, but also it's like you don't even give us the chance to treat you in a way that you don't think you deserve, which I love kind of having that. I love when you can have a heel who has like a bone to pick and a complaint, but also comes across like they're still kind of disingenuous because they're just being a real fucking asshole about it. It's like, yes, you're good, and yes, you know, you do all this stuff, but you also don't even give us a chance to like not give you the spot that you think you deserve. Lynch Mob looked great here. Really, really good, you know, kind of tag team cohesion. Big spots from them throughout. Really enjoyed the heat on Matt Cross. Matt Lynch. I loved the heel work, pulling Joey off the apron and stuff, repeatedly cutting off the hot tags. I really liked the kind of Young Bucks big dive from the Lynch Mob. Just a lot of really, really solid stuff throughout. The cutoffs repeatedly were great, and the hot tag from Joey Lynch was really good as it lasted. Then I love the kind of teasing it repeatedly. He comes back. Finish was good, if not a little, I would say a little quick. The match overall was a little quick, honestly, but really solid. I think three and a quarter star stuff overall for me. Really enjoyed it. I like Joey Lynch as a singles, but I think that he right now is, I'm not going to say better in a tag team, but I definitely think that Matt Lynch is better in the tag team setting for sure with his brother. So I really, really like these two together, honestly.
Well, what'd you give the match?
3.25.
Okay, I went 2.5. I thought, I thought Mac was coming across as the top guy. I liked Ike Cross working off him. And I think that helps him. I think Cross can get the rub from AC Mac here. Hot action to start. Liking Mac and Cross's chemistry, personality. I thought Mac and Cross heat was really well done on the Lynch brothers, and And of course, because, you know, they're good at selling underneath. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a really good opener. No frills. Wasn't out to steal the show, but just get good nuts and bolts, gain the personalities over. A good match. Then we got James Ryan versus James who?
James Ryan versus, I don't even know the other guy's name. I feel so bad.
Bender. I just can't read my writing. Dundee.
I should have. I feel so bad at these.
James Bandy.
Bandy. Yeah. Versus.
Yeah. Ryan. You know, Ryan comes out. He looks kind of like a low rent Marty Skrull. Stop it. I mean, I'm not saying about his work rate, but just wearing the jacket and the glasses. I thought James Ryan eats a punch real well. I enjoyed Bandy does stuff that you will remember in the match, like the really eye popping stuff. That was a good solid match. I gave it two stars. Thought I had a lot going for it. Two guys, young guys, and they took the time and used that time and had a good match. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I'm with you for the most part. I give it 2.25. I agree with you about the Skrull thing. I think that even when Skrull does it, it's bad enough. I don't need other guys doing the knockoff kind of version of it. But the heat, Ryan's heat was good. Bandy fighting from underneath was nice. Good fire in from Bandy for the most part. They took advantage of what time they were given, which was not a lot. I liked the Bandy, I think it was like a schoolboy into the ropes. I thought that was good. As then after he rolled all the way through, he hits like an uppercut to Ryan to set up a near fall there. I like that as a unique spot, especially to kind of somewhat turn the tide, even if it was only relatively shortly. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty quick. Bandy looked real snug. A lot of his strikes looked really good. And for a guy at his level, I think that's like what you need to work on the most. Having good fire from underneath, being so that the fans can get into you, and then being believable when you're on offense. So I could see Bandy breaking out a little bit more going forward. Could use a little bit more personality. He's not quite there with that, but also didn't get a great, you know, chance to show anything off here per se, in that regard. But he could. I think that he's got the building blocks, and there could be something there if I just get a little bit more exposure to him.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then we got Tragedy Ann, and I want to say I love that gimmick, and I absolutely adore this gimmick. Rosalja Pereira, what do you make of this?
What's okay? So, is there a reference with the Tragedy Ann that I'm not getting bigger than
Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy?
Okay, so that's okay. That's I kind of thought that's what it was because she had the dolls and stuff on the rope, but I wasn't sure if there was something else.
I mean, they were huge, like in the '80s, as dolls.
Yeah. I remember. I know those dolls. I just didn't, you know, think of that as like the what this was playing off of, and that works for me.
And it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, exactly. And both these girls have a little bit out there gimmick wise, but at least they're trying something, you know, with Aja Pereira playing the extraterrestrial gimmick. And they do some nice, I mean, these girls are, we'll talk about snugness. I mean, these girls are snug with each other here, which I really liked. Felt like a fight pretty much throughout. Nothing too cute, but some stuff that was a little bit different and interesting. Obviously it was even kind of commented on in the commentary, but the Tree of Woe charge that was then turned into just some low kicks was a nice little spot. But then pretty quickly after that, Aja Pereira hits a leg sweep that then when she catches Tragedy Ann on her knees for a basement cutter. So like I said, stuff that's not too cute but novel and stood out. But nothing too ambitious. So, I mean, they really kind of, they gave like a pretty solid performance all the way through from both. They both didn't come across insanely experienced. Yeah. Not like top level, super polished workers or anything.
And that you know, that just points with Aja coming back from Japan recently, you know, getting a tour there.
Yeah, and she probably could use some more time there, getting trained a little bit more. But hey, it's a good first step, and some of the stuff she did, like I said, stood out. And everything looked good. And that's, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be the, like, judge women's wrestling on a different rubric thing, but, I mean, we get male wrestlers nowadays who get matches on shows like this, and their shit doesn't look this good. Like, there wasn't anything that looked whiffed, there wasn't anything that looked fake, there was no business exposing bullshit. It was just a real solid middle-of-the-road wrestling match. So I gave it 2 stars. I didn't get super into anybody. I didn't get into any of the characters, but it felt like a fight. Tragedy and felt like clearly would be more of a heel, but I didn't get a real solid heel-face dynamic from the match beyond the characters. It felt like a competition between two athletes who... Then they have, like, these over-the-top gimmicks. That's, like, kind of an issue, though, because it's, like, you shouldn't be an over-the-top character gimmick and then deliver a run-of-the-mill average match, you know? To me, the eccentrics, the big-time gimmicks, those are saved for the people who then deliver eccentric match styles, and that's not what we got here.
I'm with you. I give it 1 star and 3/4. I really liked the Tragedy Ann gimmick. I thought at times some of the spots felt really too choreographed. Like, Tragedy Ann was going, it was clearly she was doing missing the clothesline spot, and she, like, missed the clothesline, like, swung over her head by, like, 5 feet. You know, maybe that might be an exaggeration, but there's plenty of air there, you know? So, I thought that they were playing a little choreographed, a little too safe there. And Tragedy Ann didn't always fit her gimmick, but one of the times she did was when she was biting, and that totally fits the gimmick. So, when she's doing that gimmick, she's got to commit all in, kind of like Alley Cat in a way. And when you have these over-the-top gimmicks, you really, for them to work, you really got to buy into it. And she shouldn't be showing any technical skills. She'd be punching, kicking, biting, screaming,
yes,
all that. So, so I think that's where it kind of, you know, you had a disconnect.
You talked about that Lariat spot. Sorry. You talked about that Lariat spot, and I forgot. But when I was at the wrestling show, they did a dark match, and the guy is a fucking XPW Academy student. His name was Johnny Victory, and he was in this match against a SoCal legend, like a not legend, but a SoCal level student guy. And this Victory guy from fucking, you know, trained in WXW, you'd think would know how to be snug. He was throwing the worst rainbow lariats that I've seen in my fucking life. I mean, the lariats was clearly, you could tell that they were supposed to miss before he even put his arm up. It was so bad. So maybe I was a little bit desensitized when I was watching this match when it came to bad lariats.
Then we got Kane Justice versus Anthony Henry in a match I liked. Gave it 3 1/4. I really liked the chain wrestling early, where, like Dylan said, it was like two badasses in the dojo rolling around. Kind of like Sammy and Yehi on the MLW show, where they're just doing some chain wrestling, but they're making it work, and it's snug and tight. Now, a lot of guys just go through the motions, but they're making it matter and mean something, so I really appreciated that. Good for Kane working the crowd. He's out there talking to him, John with him, giving eyes, staring at him. I'm good. That's Kane. I thought Kane stooging was pretty fun. At times, I thought it might have been a little over the top, because you don't want to ever forget that, hey, he's a badass jiu-jitsu guy. Don't ever forget that. So sometimes when the stooging gets a little too over the top, sometimes maybe you need to bring it back in. I liked Henry on the arm, and he's stopping the wrist. Love Henry going back to the wrist to escape the crossface. Digging all the submissions. Kane is taking just a massive ass beating, and his chest just eats up chops, and his chest looks like hamburger meat, just gross as hell. Henry with an exploder in the front row, I thought was fantastic. Kane snaps the wrist with the post, like a throwback to the first show. I love that. Loving Kane after the arm. Love the low blow by Kane at the finish to set up the finish and puts the and gets the twist ending, which puts more heat on Kane. Crowd hates Kane. Good. He just has that natural doucheness where you just watch him. Now the dude needs to work on getting his body a little tighter. You know, maybe he should look at like Buddy Murphy, and I'm not expecting Kane to look like Buddy Murphy in a week or two. But, you know, he facially looks like Buddy, same type of hair. I mean, he's a little smaller, but I think Kane puts his mind to it. Can morph his body in the next couple of years into something like that and really be a top fight guy where he, you know, cosmetically, he's already a hell of a worker, but cosmetically needs a little work on it. But, you know, the dude is tremendous, and they had a really, really crackerjack of a match. I really like the booking, and I think they put some gasoline on Kane, and good. I'm glad that the crowd booing him, because the dude's just a natural douchebag worker, and I like it. He has that sleazy JC Ice, Jamie Dundee feel to him, where you just want to beat the crap out of him. I mean, then again, if he changes his body up, he wouldn't have that type of heat. But right now, he does. So, man, embrace it, brother. What'd you make of the match, man?
Well, pretty sure you said morph his body, but I like that when you're talking about Buddy comparison that you said Murph his body. He can Murph, he can Murph himself so he can be like Buddy Murphy. Yeah, I loved Dylan talking about in the beginning that Kane could be working maybe a bit of a rope-a-dope here, which I thought was good, especially because you talk about that body, which, I mean, I can't blame him. I mean, when I was Kane's age, I probably looked about the same size, but probably had like
that. I'm not trying to body shame the dude, because I mean,
I'm just saying, you know, I know,
sure wouldn't want him to have my body, so
yeah, I mean, when I was Kane's age and I was, you know, kind of doing sports and stuff, I probably had like an even still had a few pounds on him and maybe a little bit taller. I don't know, I'd have to meet the guy to find out how tall he is exactly, but
I bet he's 5'9", 5'10".
Yeah, so I'd be a couple inches taller than him and probably about 50 to 60 pounds heavier at the time. But I was also, you know, the same thing. I was, like, kind of doing more of, you know, football and sports where having a little bit more weight on your frame is a positive thing. So for him to, you know, play off of kind of being able to trick Henry into not taking him as seriously was good. The finger in the post spot, fantastic. I'm with you on that. I loved that. The finish I thought was amazing. The trading back and forth, the submission, super smooth. Both these guys really great together. Henry, after seeing Anthony Henry live, after all these fucking years of watching him on tape and really liking him, I think if you haven't seen Anthony Henry live, I think you really miss why he works as a heel. Because on tape, I think I've always kind of felt like he's a natural babyface.
He's a heel.
But when I saw him in person, I
you
got
want to punch
the heel
right
present.
In the fucking mouth. Yeah,
yes, I fucking heel. Hated him. He's such a great heel. It was so weird to me how that switched, because I had never seen, you know what I mean? All this time I've been watching him, I've always been kind of like, he just comes across like he could be a babyface and like blah, blah, blah. But then the second I saw him in person, I was like, man, fuck this guy. Like, I fucking hate him. You're so right. Like, it's so interesting because here he's playing babyface a little bit more. But yeah, like, he's just such a great heel. Loved him on top.
He reminds me of, I mean, because it's in vogue now. He reminds me of Johnny from Karate Kid.
Yes. That's a really good comparison for sure. Loved this match. 3.25 star. But much like Sammy Guevara and Yehi, it did feel like I was maybe anticipating a bit more than what I got, just because of how much I like these guys.
Yeah.
But good action, good stuff all around, and I loved the finish. I don't think I can put it over the top how much I loved this finish with Kane grabbing
the
left.
I'm with you. That's one of my favorite finishes I've seen probably all year.
Yeah, fantastic finish. Anthony Henry comes across like a dick.
I've heard stories that make him sound like maybe he's even a dick in real life. But every now and then he does stuff like this where it's really giving. He didn't have to let Kane beat him at all. Kane is, you know, nothing compared to him. Even with a fluky ref low blow finish or whatever, he didn't even have to do that, you know, like realistically. Just based on how much experience he has, how long he's been in the business, and this guy's a fucking rookie. He gives him this. He makes him look great throughout the match. I mean...
Now, hold on, let me interrupt. Did it make any sense whatsoever for Anthony Henry trying to shake Kane's hand after that finish, though?
No, not really, but...
I think again, that was more of a, like, hey, yeah, but yeah, and I'm glad Kane didn't shake his hand either, because I sure have fuck, wouldn't want that.
Right, which helps yeah, to get Kane over his...
Go, someone kicked me in the balls and pinned me. I shouldn't be like, hey, man, good job, you know?
Right. And
unless and Henry was working total heel, too, then I can understand it. Like, hey, you out-heeled me. Good job. Right. But he wasn't playing heel, so.
If it was a, you know, yeah, like honor amongst thieves kind of thing,
yeah.
Which is kind of what it felt like they were trying to play off of in the end. But, yeah, like, I didn't get told that story in the match. So,
yeah,
I agree with you that definitely hurts the match. I don't know if I said, but I gave it 3.25. I don't remember what you gave it. Was it pretty much...
Same thing.
Yep. Same thing. Okay. So, we're both 3.25. Really enjoyed the match. But, yeah, I feel like if these guys... I feel like if you book this match in Evolve, you know what I mean? As, like, a semi-main event or something, I think these guys could have, like, a 4-star match. Like, maybe even better than that. But here, I mean... The crowd bought into everything they did. Great work, but, you know, missing a little something when it comes to just, like, what I was predicting or expecting.
And right now, you know, right now Kane is right at that level where, you know, Anthony Henry in reality should be eating up 70-65% of the match because, I mean, Kane's the young boy still with a huge potential. He shouldn't be going 50-50 with Anthony Henry or Freddie Ahai at this point. In this company, maybe 6 months from now, yeah, then maybe he should go 50-50 with Henry, you know, once he gets elevated some more. But right now, you know, we just got to start it and go, you know. I mean, Kane's fantastic. Henry is a stud. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. What did you think of Team Tag versus Michael Spencer and, what was it, Razor?
Spencer
and Razor.
Yeah.
Razor.
Jeez, now you got me questioning myself. I thought it was Razor, but maybe it's Razor. This whole thing, I mean, this and the next match felt like one big kind of thing. I love Tag, great heat, Buck with them. Also, you know, really, really good heat.
Do you want to just combine the two matches then and take it?
I would assume that it's like, to me, it felt like one big...
Because it felt like one big segment. And,
yeah.
And then the payoff with Matt Griffin getting his ass kicked.
What's funny is I think, I don't know if it was the other action show or if it was an anarchy show, but I felt like Team Tag was kind of getting a buzz or a recognition that they didn't deserve based on the performance. But here I kind of got it a little bit more.
Well, the last action show, they ran an angle... Where they were refusing to leave the ring unless they got booked.
Okay, so it was anarchy, where I thought that their in-ring didn't deliver at the level that they were being portrayed at. But here, yeah. I thought that they did a great job. I mean, they were super good heels. It helped, again, I talk about this crowd, but this crowd is fucking amazing. They're like, they buy into everything. They get super hyped for everything going on. They believe in the heels. They believe in the baby faces, and they hate the heels. But yeah, I thought that the action from Tag was really good here. Really got into him as shitty fucking heels. They were just mugging this team, using as much kind of underhanded double teaming as they can. They've also got the fucking, you know, Billy Buck on the floor taking cheap shots when he can. Just great stuff. And then you get, yeah, once the match is over, Team Tag get the win pretty decidedly. Cabana Man Dan comes out. The crowd's super hot for him. He's got the flip flops. He's calling out Buck. He wants to, you know, prove himself against Billy Buck. And, even still, like, Billy Buck tries to stalk him and get a cheap shot before the match, or, like, right when the match starts. Cabana Man Dan is hot, though. He misses that, and then he's going for pin after pin, trying to just, you know, get the win, which I don't know if I necessarily love as like, a guy who's trying to come out and fight for the honor of all this, that he's also seemingly trying to just use, like, pinning combinations to get almost what would be a fluky win. But I do like that it it buys into the context of like that wrestling is a sport, and what it really comes down to is trying to get wins. So
I buy into it because he's a plucky underdog babyface. Right. But you know what? He has no connection to Spencer or Riser. So I mean, it's not as personal as people. I think he just came in for the save because they're both mid-card guys. And
he had the match against Buck probably already booked, you know, so he was just, he's coming out as an excuse. So yeah, then he's just trying to get the win. Love that the heat set up with, you know, outside interference from Team Tag. I mean, Commander Man Dan comes across like unabashedly. He's a clap your hands, say yeah kind of baby face. He does not, some of these guys, you hear them talk about it, they get really embarrassed, and or not even embarrassed, but they're super self-conscious about being like so overtly baby face that you clap and you know, scream to the crowd and do the whole thing. But Commander Man Dan shows no shame, and it works because this crowd buys into it. Really enjoyed the heat from Buck, and then the comeback from Dan I thought was really good. I mean, I seen Cabana Man Dan here and there, but never really got into it. But here, I thought that his stuff looked good. He looked really fluid, athletic, big spots, flying over the top. I think it helps that I've seen him in other stuff where he's kind of in clusterfucky type matches. And here, playing against someone who's a really solid base for him, helped so that he was able to pull off just some big spots and be able to shine and not necessarily just come across as another guy in a sea of spots. Loved, you know, him fighting off Team Tag. He's got the double flip-flop chops, but, you know, it's not enough to fight them off because he's essentially going 3-1 with the referee distracted. Buck gets that buckshot super kick, puts him down, gets the win. And then we get Matt, you know, Mr. Delicious. He's in the ring trying to break it up, but he eats the buckshot super kick, put down, and he's out, which, you know, maybe in his better days, back when he was in NWA Wildslide, he could come back from that super kick a little bit faster. But now that he's just the owner of the company, he's put down by that super kick, lights completely out, can barely get up, and looks like his jaw just is completely removed from his face. All in all, as a whole big segment, I really enjoyed this. Probably give it like 3.5. For the whole thing.
Yeah, as a segment, I agree. I think you got to vote on it as a segment, yeah.
Yeah, as a complete segment, 3.5. I really thought that I like Tag and Buck together a lot. They eat up a lot of time for the middle of the show and get you a nice heel win with just kind of get the crowd upset and really pissed off to then lead into being super hot for the next match, which is essentially babyface versus babyface. But really good stuff overall. What do you think about the segment overall, Pete?
Yeah, I give it like a 4-star segment. I thought it worked perfectly. I thought it got Team Tag over as a big, you know, asshole tag team. Billy Buck got over as the leader of the group. Cabana Man Dan got over as this plucky baby face. Coming out of this, I want to see a Cabana Man Dan versus Kane Justice match. I think they'd mesh incredibly well. I think they'd have a hell of a match because I think right now Kane is like that. I think he's under the pecking order. I think he's below Buck and AC Mac as top level heels. I know he's behind Buck, and I think he's fighting AC Mac for the second for the number two heel spot in the company. But I think him and Cabana Man Dan would have a hell of a match. I think they'd match up well. I think they'd have a good chemistry together. I loved the payoff with Griffin getting ass handed to him, payoff, beat down, super heated. The crowd, I mean, bought into this, like, you know, felt like this was like legitimate heat. Billy Buck is the leader. He reminds me, I mean, I know, Dylan's compared him to Arn Anderson. I see a lot of, Buddy Landell in him. In the way he gets heat. He's as efficient as like Arn, so I get that comparison, but I feel he has a little bit more charisma and I buy into more like a Buddy Landell shit talking heel, and the Team Tag is his muscle.
You're talking about
kind of like how Buddy Landell would do it with Butch Reed in Mid South as his muscle. And I really liked this segment. I thought it established Buck and Team Tag as this badass crew. Now it kind of makes me wonder, you know, is Mr. Delicious going to make a comeback in his promotion? Who's he going to bring in with him? I mean, it feels like he's going to drag feel like Tank comes out of retirement. You know, maybe Matt brings in his, like, you know, brings in his brawling under retirement team of him, Tank, and maybe one other guy. I don't know who. Maybe a Cyrus the Destroyer type person comes in with him. He brings in some serious muscle. I don't know if they'd be able to talk Tank into coming back this soon from retirement, but, you know, they never say never in wrestling. I mean, in my perfect world, it'd be Ice Cube. Not Ice Cube, what's his
Iceberg.
Name? Iceberg and Tank with Griffin, but we'll see. I have no idea where they're going with this. But as a segment, I thought it was incredible and a great way to start it out. Overall, yeah, it feels like it's something you can't do by match, because some of the parts were greater than the whole of the parts was greater than the pieces. It was a big, great segment and just incredible. It almost felt like it should have ended the show the angle, but because you couldn't do it that way, it made most sense here, and it was bonkers. It was awesome.
I was going to say, I'd take Jason Cross as the returning person to help out Mr. Delicious. That would be an interesting one. And then when you talked about Buck, it made me think about it. I think someone who, you know, you didn't mention and Dylan hasn't mentioned that I think Buck kind of reminds me of is a heel Lawler, honestly. He kind of comes across to me similar to that.
Well, especially with his gear, it looks like Jerry Lawler-esque, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and just like the charisma and the big-time striking kind of finishing that he does.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. And, you know, and Lawler was a hell of a heel. What do you think of Slim J and Cam Carter? They're getting rave reviews all over from the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was talking about with the crowd being the real MVPs of the show. They were so fucking hot for this. And, I mean, the action was phenomenal.
And, you know, you got to say something, too, about that crowd. Coming off a hot angle like that, sometimes they go, you know, go quiet. But, man, they did it for this. They these guys worked their asses off and got that crowd back. And they never lost them. But I just want to say that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like the crowd was super hot before the match even started for them, but then they earned it, and then they worked to get the crowd even hotter. I got to give big ups to Slim J here for really giving a lot to Cam Carter to help put him over big in this match. I mean, not just like offense wise, but just the effort with which he's putting forward here. The action between the two, I really liked the opening. It was kind of almost the inverse of what you would expect from guys like this. The opening was a lot more solid. You know, they're doing some grappling, but felt like a real fight between the two guys, some strikes that really were just super nasty. And then it felt like it kind of broke down into a spot fest instead of the other way around, where you kind of do the spot fest that breaks down into a brawl. But the finishing stretch stuff was just fucking so heated. And the big, I guess, real big spot of the whole thing, I mean, the selling from Slim J, when I talk about what Slim J gave to Cam Carter here, I mean, the selling was kind of the biggest thing that he gave him, is that he made all of Cam Carter's offense look like $1 million repeatedly, just like going over the top, big facial selling, big physical bumping for everything that Cam Carter was doing. Huge spot at the finish that I really, really loved. The superplex into the guillotine choke by Slim J really showed like a depth of character and it just, it felt like the best version of the Davey Richards bullshit, you know, superplex into the brainbuster, into the submission hold thing. It felt like the real, like, believable version of that he hits the superplex, he floats through, grabs the choke. Cam Carter able to counter that into the, you know, into Cam Carter getting the big fucking win. Felt like super huge. Crowd's nuts going just fire for the whole thing. I don't know. I think in the building, I could see going probably even higher and putting this at like match of the year level, just based on the heat and the action. Watching it on tape, I can't necessarily go that high. I give it 3.75 star. Loved the action. Star making performance, really, for Cam Carter. But you need that that veteran who's really giving. And you talked about the handshake between Henry and Kane feeling a little bit forced, but the hug for the post-match on here felt legit and earned. That's the difference, I guess. That's the difference, I guess, between going from babyface as opposed to what should have been a heel match that felt like a little bit like it was being presented with Henry being a babyface more than he should have. I could almost see that a little bit more if you had gone, you know, heel. If you had a big heel versus heel with a, you know, a young upstart rookie heel getting the better of the kind of more established heel, and then you have this here, it would be a nice duality. But unfortunately, it didn't deliver in the same way. But this one, I think, this one, they were trying to kind of give you that same feeling, but the babyface side of it. And I think that they executed super well. And again, I think that the crowd gave it that bump. And I think, like I said, if I was in the crowd, I probably would go even higher. And I would probably have this in my conversation as match of the year, just because, like, it felt like that crowd was, this crowd was insanely hot and probably just, like, so fucking ravenous that it would be impossible to not get caught up in it.
Agreed. It almost has that Riddle, I mean, totally different style, but it has that Riddle Gunnar Miller type vibe from SCI Live. Totally different style, though. But yeah, where it was rabid hot, the crowd's rabid for it. But if this match took place in like 1998 on Nitro, people would talk about it as a match of the year contender. If this happened in 2002 at early Ring of Honor shows, you'd hear Carino saying this is that they'd be calling it a match of the year contender after the show was over. Here, it was a great spot fest. I'm with you. I ended up with 3 3/4, but I'm sure live is one of them things that would skew higher. I liked where they were trying to, like, you know, I kind of liked they were doing some one-upmanship early on, and then they're working into some mirror spots, big moves, great sprint spot fest. Slim J worked working his ass off. I like the comparison to Dylan bringing it up because he got me hooked on Yehi on this series, which was the Slim J Yehi's best of. And I think Cam Carter and Slim J could do a best of, too. Super heated. I would have liked to see Slim J early on trying to work the mat a little bit more, like try to dominate, because that's what is. I mean, that's the view Dylan brings up was based all around mat work. And here was more about high spots. And I would like to see Slim J try to ground Cam Carter earlier. And maybe work about 5 or 6 minutes of control, and then allowing Cam to get up and get more spots. I mean, that's how I would have structured it. But they didn't. They went for a different story, and the story still kicked ass. But I bet you if I was in the building, I would have ranked it higher, because these type of matches just get over more live than they do on tape, because you're almost desensitized a lot to big moves and this and that. But still a hell of a match. And that's the thing about this show, man. They went from right before intermission, they hit just a great match with Kane and Henry, an incredible segment. Then they had this great match. And then they have a main event, which had to follow that and worked a totally different style. But, I think one of my other things, I think I would have moved Slim J and Cam Carter into the right before intermission match, because of how freaking hot it was, and having almost stole the show from the main event, where I don't think quite Henry and Kane did that, even though it was a kick ass match. But I mean, that's just a small pick, and who would have known? But Williams and Royal, I thought was tremendous. I love Ace working the crowd, you know, establishing himself as the heel. Ace using his highs and roughness early on. Hot sauce after the arm. Royal sells the arm big time. Love the counter to the corner thing. Love Dylan explaining the psychology here. I thought hot sauce was awesome. How he kept on, you know, he'd work, then go back to the arm. And Royal, I love the story of how you know, Royal, he was hitting big moves, but he wasn't able to, like Dylan was explaining, he wasn't able to get it all because Williams worked over his arm, and like Space Jam, he wasn't able to get all of it, and then along with some other moves. So I just love that story. I went 3 3/4, so I was leaning towards 4, but because I really liked the subtlety of a lot of the stuff that was going on. But I ended up at 3 3/4, and I love that main event. What were your thoughts, Timothy?
I gave it 3.5, and the reason why is just because it's really hard for me to get into Williams, and it's not even just that, you know, he's kind of damaged goods coming off of really shitty booking and Evolve, and feeling like almost the Olsaran that was left after Catchpoint was good as the new leader and all this. It's also on top of it that he seems to feel this new need to not present himself as just a pure technical wrestler, which I think is what he's best at, is that he's really, as especially now that he's become Powerbomb TV champion, he feels the need to repeatedly try to put himself over as like an equal level brawler, even here, like on the level of Ace Royal, which I think is just not, it just doesn't fucking work for me. Like, I love Williams as a grappler, and I really can get into him in that context. And if he, the stuff that I loved liked the most out of this match was the arm work and the technical stuff. So if he had just kind of dropped stuff like throwing big lariats and trying to stand toe-to-toe brawling with Ace, I could get into him a lot more. But because he repeatedly feels the need to kind of do the dick measuring kind of shoot style, like striking stuff, it hurts the matches for me. That said, like, I feel like I'm I don't know if you even said this, but I feel like you kind of hinted at it, is that I'm not, this felt like a step down. The crowd was insanely heated for the match before this. You talked about the Henry versus Kane Justice match also being like, feeling like a big time encounter. And then you have this, and this did not feel on the same level as those two matches.
I agree with you there. I just love the story they were telling.
The story that they were telling here was really good. And me and you are not super far off of each other, honestly, for our ratings. Right. But it just hurts it for me because I don't like seeing Henry stand and bang with Ace here at all. Ace should be the power guy.
You mean hot sauce?
I don't want what? Did I say Royal and Ace? I said Henry.
No, you said Henry and Ace.
Okay, Williams. I don't want Williams trying to stand and bang with the Ace, like, at all. Yeah. And I just don't buy into it. If he wants to grapple him, I can get into that big time. And when he was grappling with him, I loved it. The arm work was good. The way the arm work played into everything, I loved the ref bump actually was good for me. The counter from the big arm bar with, you know, Ace showing off his power, blocking it, and then eventually how that played into the finish as he does gets the Fujiwara for the finish, was all done super well. But I don't know. I just feel like Henry does not feel... Henry being in your main event on a show like this felt like a step down from the rest of the show. And I get it because he's the Powerbomb TV champion. You want to present him as the main event. I loved the post-match angle with Joey Lynch coming out and challenging him. I like everything. I like the presentation of the championship. I like so much of it. My only issue is to me, Hot Sauce is a step down as a performer, as a draw, all this stuff. He just doesn't feel at the same level to me as everything else that's going on around him, especially in this setting, to where I buy into him on this level. Like, on the indies, he doesn't cross my mind as a top guy on the indies. And I know that that's probably not the way a lot of other people see him, but it's just, for me, it's really hard to not...
I'm with you. I don't buy him. I don't buy him as a... I think there's better mat workers. I find that there's better... There's a lot more guys with more charisma. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I don't buy him as a top-tier indie guy.
Yeah, and I think my issue with him, too, is that, like, all the other stuff that you say is true, but I think that the hardest part for me is that as a brawler, I see him as, like, a basement-level brawler, and he continuously is feeling the need to put that stuff into his matches, and I'm just like, just drop it. Just stop trying to brawl. Like, it's not...
Well, and he's so damn skinny, he shouldn't be trying to brawl, because it's just not...
Well, yeah, exactly.
I'm a believer. I'm a believe guy from perception, where I don't think small guys or super skinny guys should be going toe-to-toe with Ace, who's has 1980 size wrestling body.
Yeah, and then, I mean, on top of that, like, with all that said, I mean, Royal was fantastic here.
Like, yeah, he was incredible.
Yeah, he is clearly, I think without a doubt, the best unsigned talent in wrestling. The guy, I don't think that there's really, I think when it comes down to it, when I kind of break it down, the guy is just so fucking good in every regard to where he should be. Someone should be using him frequently. They should be booking him as a top guy somewhere. Yeah. Because he's got everything you need. He's got all the tools.
And you can do both. You can be a great heel or a great baby face.
Great heel, great baby face. He can brawl. He can work on the mat. He, you know what I mean? He can,
yeah,
tag can't work. Fly. He Big can't move. Fly. But he's a great tag worker. He can bump. He can stooge. He can also, you know, he can fight. He can stand tall. He can do it all. And it's just, yeah, it's just to see him in this setting again, delivering super well, super hot crowd, great match, great challenger, good stuff. And from a presentation standpoint, I get why you make this your main event, but I just think that from a delivery standpoint and from a prestige standpoint, it didn't quite hit the levels to make me feel like it was the main event.
Fair enough. Final thoughts, I'd give it an easy thumbs up. I thought the wrestling was really good on the, especially the last, you know, four matches, including segments and stuff like that, were incredible. Really looking forward to going forward with this company. I think bigger and better, and it's a fundraiser. So man, they're doing it right. Anything you want to add, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, easy thumbs up, without a doubt. Action wrestling, keeping the shows, you know, under 2 hours, which is always a big thumbs up for me.
Yeah.
Easy to breeze through. Great matches. Great niche, too. Have to give them huge credit because they've got the local guys that stand out. You talk about AC Mack. You talk about, you know, Billy Buck and Team Tag. You got the guys who are, you know, getting their standout spots here in action. I talked about with MLW, but who's doing their best work in MLW? No, who's doing their best work in action? You got a lot of guys who stand out who are special to the promotion. They're working in other companies too, but they're also kind of standing out here. But then you get the mix with the Powerbomb TV guys coming in, the guys who are, you know, working in other spots. You got Anthony Henry. So it's like, yeah, I mean, this right now, Action Wrestling is my favorite company to watch, and they've only had two shows, but right now I'm really, really loving getting to watch whatever I'm getting to see from them. I've enjoyed so much. So big thumbs up. Big thumbs up to the company. Really excited to continue to see more from them. So, yeah, that's kind of my takeaways coming out of this.
Awesome. All right, man. On that note, anything you got to plug, brother?
Same old, same old. Just check me out on Twitter at Lucha Undead. I'll be at the Cow Palace show. I'll be at the King of the Indies for sure. The Cow Palace show, I'm so iffy on at this point that I might even skip it and just eat the money on the tickets and just check something else out. Especially because I might end up going to Hood Slam Friday night and being out extra late because those shows run until like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Plus, you know, it's gonna air sometimes. You know, that also helps.
Right, and knowing that I can catch it on tape, I want to get in the building for. I really want to see Cobb versus Goto. So, but I don't even know if I care that much about where my seats are gonna be at because I'm not gonna see how hard they hit each other from my seats all the way up in the upper deck. So, I mean, if I end up just getting in the building for the main event, I won't give a shit. But yeah, just so if you're in the Bay for the weekend for the shows, hit me up. I'm always down to say what's up to anybody, you know, at all times. I'm also going to be checking out all the breweries in the area. So if you're a beer fan and a wrestling fan, which is a Venn diagram that's essentially a circle at this point, hit me up because I've got a couple things planned there, especially considering a good friend of mine is having an anniversary for their brewery that weekend when I happen to be up there, so that's going to be fun. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Pete, what do you got to plug?
Yeah, follow me at Titans O Wrestling. And remember, WorldCast Wednesday is every Wednesday. We drop an episode of World Class. We're talking about World Class Championship Wrestling. The next thing on my agenda is Scenic City. I have no live shows until Scenic City at the first week of August. So looking forward to that, man. It's always a last show. I loved the last year before. I thought it was a show of the year contender. I'm definitely looking forward to it, and I'm sure we'll talk more closely, intently about it coming closer. Everyone have a great week. Check out whatever you're watching, man. I hope you're enjoying it. Later.